Off the Ball, GAA.
And Clare pushed up absolutely everyone. They were, I think they were a point or two up at the time, and they went on and won it because they weren't trying to be Limerick. They were trying to be themselves.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The news round on Off the Ball. This is News Talk.
Good evening, you're welcome along to Thursday night's Off the Ball. It's Owen here with you till 10 o'clock. Coming up, we're going to be speaking to Brian O'Driscoll from 7:30. He'll be looking ahead to Ulster against Leinster tomorrow night. He'll also be giving his takes on what occurred in Champions Cup quarter-final weekend over the course of last Saturday and Sunday as well. After 8 o'clock then, Richie Hogan makes his 2026 bow here on Off the Ball. He'll be coming into studio live to preview the beginning of the Munster and Leinster Senior Hurling Championships. And then from 9 o'clock, the football show is coming your way. Kevin Kilbane will be reflecting on the Champions League quarter-finals over the course of the last couple of days and looking ahead to another big weekend in the Premier League. You've got a Merseyside derby, you've got Manchester United versus Chelsea, you've got another Tottenham Hotspur game, which seems to be the biggest show in town in terms of drama, and of course Manchester City versus Arsenal on Sunday as well. Our number is 087 918 180 if you want to send us a WhatsApp message. Arthur O'Dea is here. How are you doing, Arthur?
Great.
And John Duggan is here as well. John, welcome to Thursday.
Owen and Arthur, good evening.
How are you getting on?
We're great.
Yeah, we might get to Tottenham in a moment. So I dare say they'll figure in the news round. I've kind of reminded myself there that we need to talk to you about Spurs. We do want to start tonight, though, with the story regarding Munster Rugby. So if you're just catching up with this, Roger Randall was appointed this week as Munster attack coach. He's going to assume the role in July. Now, he previously worked under head coach Clayton McMillan at the Chiefs in Super Rugby. Now, something that came to light around this over the past couple of days for fans, for journalists, is that Roger Randall, when he was a player for the Hurricanes, was arrested and charged with rape. So it's important to say here that he's always denied all allegations on this front, but the allegations are from April 1997, when the team were playing in South Africa and a 31-year-old woman from Durban made the allegation against Roger Randall. However, she withdrew the charges in May of 1997. We got comment from the IRFU and from Munster yesterday. The IRFU told us that the appointment was made by Munster Rugby and did not require IRFU approval. And then the statement that Munster Rugby put out said, Munster Rugby is aware of a historical matter concerning newly appointed coach Roger Randall from 1997. At the time, no legal process was pursued and the matter was closed. Munster Rugby carried out due diligence during this recruitment process and are satisfied with the appointment, which has been ratified and approved. There has since been some reporting on this story. So the Irish Independent yesterday reported that three former players who are independent members of Munster's Professional Games Board, Billy Holland, Killian Keane and Mick O'Driscoll, stepped down earlier this week because of their objections to the appointment. And they also reported that more resignations may follow. So fair to say this was the big talking point going into Clayton McMillan's press conference today ahead of their fixture this weekend in the URC. We don't always do this, but we think the best approach to covering this is just to play the full unedited section of Clayton McMillan addressing the Roger Randall situation. Have a listen.
Yeah, look, I'm well aware of how our supporters and people in the rugby community are feeling about Roger's appointment. I fully respect that people will have an opinion, but it's not an opinion that's shared by me. I've known Roger for a long time. I think he's an outstanding human, well-loved by family and the people that have worked alongside him for a long period of time.
It was reported also that there have been resignations in the Professional Games Board, some ex-players involved in that. Would that internal disagreement concern you?
Yeah, I'm aware that there's some former players that on the PGC that resigned as a result of this decision. And a bit like our supporters, I respect that they will have their reasons for why they did that.
And just finally then, did you anticipate such a strong reaction? Both from outside and within the province?
It's a hard question to answer. I can't jump into the minds of other people. I can only speak for the person that I know and that I've worked alongside. And as I said before, this is a person who has had an allegation made against him. It didn't proceed to a legal process drop pretty quickly, but the stigma of that has remained with him. But I admire the way that he has, as a rugby player and a coach and a father, dealt with that challenge. He's played all around the world. He's coached at the elite level for a long period of time, in Italy, France, Japan, New Zealand, Commonwealth Games, Olympic Games. Played for the All Blacks. Like, this is a guy who's highly respected in many parts of the world.
Just to follow up on that, if or when there was resistance maybe to your decision to go for Rodgell, how did you handle that? What was the case you made that he was the right guy to go with?
In terms of candidates, as I think it was last week that I alluded to, or maybe a couple of weeks ago, there were a number of people that expressed interest. But Roger stood out for me naturally because I know him as a person and I worked with him for a long time, and we've got our challenges here, and what I feel I need is somebody that can come and add value, as I said, alongside Mossy in a shared attack role, but also somebody that I've worked with. The job here isn't an easy one, and I think as we all do in life, we lean to people who we trust and have worked with before to navigate through situations just like this.
Munster will be in a statement said they've carried out due diligence around this appointment. Is that your vouching for him, or has there been more around digging into the circumstances of that case in 97?
Oh, no, I think there's been a number of people throughout the organisation that would have been canvassed around Roger's appointment, and in the end that process was determined that Roger was ratified in the job.
I suppose last one for me, for those people who have concerns or disagreements or share those opinions you mentioned earlier on about this point, what would you say to them, supporters of Munster who don't agree with this appointment?
I would ask people to put their trust in me and other people. I think if you jumped onto the Chiefs website, for example, and you read the comments about Roger Randall, you'll see glowing reports of a man that's loved by a huge cross-section in New Zealand. A family man, an honest man, and one that I trust unequivocally. I can understand that people will have an opinion, but it's not one that I share, and I honestly believe that he can come here and help our team and players develop and excel.
Just have you had much contact with Roger since the announcement and obviously the reaction to his announcement, and does he have any concerns about coming at this point?
I have been in touch with him. I obviously feel a huge sense of responsibility around making sure that he's looked after and that he comes here, and that it's an environment where he feels like he's welcome. And clearly, there's some challenges, and Roger is aware of those challenges. But it says a lot about him that he's still excited about the opportunity to come here and contribute. He knows, like any coach or any player, come into the environment that you've got to earn the respect and trust of people. But it helps when people have an open mind, and he comes in without his hands tied.
Yeah, so that's the entire section of today's press conference from Clayton McMillan involving the Roger Randall question. And look, the intervening questions afterwards focused on the rugby, but it's hard to separate them at this point, given, I guess, the last couple of weeks at Munster Rugby as well and some of the challenges that the province have faced in other areas of the setup. And that seems to be the constant thing now at this stage of the season, the Munster on the pitch. How much is that going to be affected by what's going on off the pitch? And there are plenty of questions about how the province has conducted itself over the last little while.
Munster Rugby issued that statement, and I'm going to read it out here. Munster Rugby is aware of a historical matter concerning newly appointed coach Roger Randall from 1997. At the time, no legal process was pursued and the matter was closed. Munster Rugby carried out due diligence during this recruitment process and are satisfied with the appointment, which has been ratified and approved. I wonder if it would have been useful for not just Clayton McMillan to be there facing the media today, but the Munster executives and the other Munster stakeholders that made this decision to answer questions in a public forum and not just release a statement on it. I wonder would that have been useful as well.
Yeah, I think that's a very fair point. We're going to get underway with the news around plenty of other stories of note in the rugby world today as well, not least what's happening with regards to the Women's Six Nations. So Ireland back in action this weekend, and Scott Beamont has named his team for Saturday's Women's Six Nations clash with Italy at the Dexcom Stadium in Galway. Second row, Ruth Campbell and centre Nancy McGillivray come into the side, with Dorothy Wall and Eve Higgins dropping to the bench. Sam Monaghan returns from injury to make the replacements, while Avian Riley misses out despite a return to training this week. There's also an international debut on the wing for Leinster's Robin O'Connor. The 20-year-old replaces Vicky Elms-Kinlan after impressing in training. She also scored 5 tries for the Wolfhounds during their Celtic Challenge campaign, and Beaman outlined what the youngster did to impress him.
She's a really tough player. She's got physicality, change of direction. She's a great stepper, and in the women's game, that's perhaps not as prevalent as in the guys, but she's got a great change of direction, and that creates attacking moments and opportunities for us, either to line break or get to momentum. She knows her way to the try line, and she's an excellent fielder of a rugby ball. So she's played quite a bit of fullback over her formative years. So like anything going up in the air, we know she's incredibly competent and confident under. And you know, the Italians bring with them a pretty strong box kicking game. So again, a slightly different challenge of that she's. You know, she's got aerial prowess, and has the ability to sort of dominate that space.
Yeah, and plenty of team news on the men's side of the game as well today. So a dozen changes have been made by Leinster ahead of the URC Interpro clash with Ulster this weekend. Hugo Keenan, James Ryan and Gary Ringrose are the only players to have stayed in the starting 15 from last week's win over the Sharks. So Keenan's at fullback, Gary Ringrose will be partnered by Robbie Henshaw at centre. James Ryan set to captain the side. He'll now have Brian Deeney beside him in the second row. Ulster, meanwhile, who they're up against, have made just one change from their Challenge Cup win over La Rochelle. Sean Raffel comes in place of Nick Timoney. The back rower had been a doubt for the tie due to a hip injury and hasn't been included in the matchday squad. Then also just to give you the Munster team news, which very much was the B-side of the story in Munster today. So Clayton McMillan has named his Munster side to face Benetton this weekend. They've made 8 changes for their URC clash. Dermot Barron, Calvin Nash and John Klein have all returned from injury to start, while Shane Daly, Andrew Smith, Michael Alalatoa, Tom Ahern and John Hodnett also come into the side. And there's also returns for Ollie Yeager and Brian Gleeson, who've been included amongst the replacements.
Just to interject on Munster again as well, and I was thinking about this after the Exeter game, and I kind of did a bit of a dive after the Exeter game into research about stats, because my late mother was from Limerick. We were reared on Halloween in 1978, and I was only 3 weeks old, but I was there, and it's a bit of a joke because everybody was there out of pride. Everybody would say that they were at the All Blacks game, and then you had the Champions Cup wins under Declan Kidney, but even the journey that Munster went on, and it went through since 2000, since the start of the millennium. In the first decade of this millennium, from say 2000 to 2009, Munster were in 8 semi-finals at least in the Champions Cup, and won a couple and lost a couple of finals. But those journeys, beating Stade Francais and Caen and Toulouse, and then going to Cardiff and winning twice, beating Biarritz and Toulouse, like magical days. Then the next decade, they were in 6 semi-finals. But the last semi-final they were in was in 2019. And this decade, they failed to reach the quarterfinals on 4 occasions. They've only been in the quarterfinal twice. They were 5th in their pool this season. This year, they were knocked out of the secondary competition, the European Challenge Cup, in the last 16. They're 7th in the URC. They're just inside the playoff positions. Leinster, when they play Toulon, will be in their 6th semi-final in a row. Now, they've agonisingly lost finals, haven't won one since 2018, could be going back to Bilbao. But can anybody explain or answer for the decline of Munster as a sporting force? And should there be accountability for the decline? Because from a rugby performance perspective, compared to the heritage of the results and the magical days Munster produced, the province, from a sporting perspective, is in a crisis. No question about it for me.
Yeah, it certainly is a slow decline over the last number of years. And
because everybody wants to see Munster be what we grew up knowing what Munster were as a sporting force.
It is, and it just enriches the game as a whole, and I think it's even gone beyond the
point
I think it's gone beyond the point of rival fans even sort of enjoying any sort of on the field decline at this point. At this stage, it's just become a situation where you'd be a little bit concerned for the future of Irish rugby as a result of what's actually happening at Munster. So let's see how things develop. That's what the picture is on the pitch and off the pitch with regards to today's rugby. In football then, let's kick things off with the European action, because we've got three Premier League sides looking to book their place in European semi-finals. We've got Nottingham Forest looking to get to a first European semi-final in over 40 years this evening. It's 1-1 between them and Porto ahead of the second leg quarter-final clash at the City Ground. It's been a turbulent year at the City Ground, with the club also deep in a relegation battle. Vitor Pereira appears to have steadied the ship since taking over from Sean Dyche and becoming their fourth manager of the season. Chris Wood has also returned from injury as they head into a vital stage of the campaign. He had been ruled out since October, with the striker also having knee surgery last December. He spoke about the club's year so far and whether they're more focused on Premier League survival or potentially European silverware.
Look, yeah, it's been a tough season. It's been a lot of change and a lot of upheaval at times, but it's also been a lot of positivity. We're in a quarterfinals of a European competition, which is nothing to be snide at or shudded at. We're very much happy to be in this place and giving ourselves opportunity to progress here at the City Ground. And yeah, we'd like to be higher up in the Premier League, but that's life. We're in where we are, and it's about doing the business to make sure we're here next season for sure. Well, the most important one is the next game, and that's tomorrow night. And if we can do the job then we can focus on doing the job again on Sunday. So they're both vastly important to us, and we want to win both of them.
Elsewhere, things should be a little more comfortable for Aston Villa. They're up against Bologna, where they lead 3-1 on aggregate. In the Conference League, Crystal Palace also have a sizeable advantage heading into their quarter-final second leg. They are 3-0 up against Italian side Fiorentina. All three games kick off at 8 p.m. The other news from an English football standpoint is that Manchester City have confirmed that Bernardo Silva will leave the club at the end of the season. The Portuguese midfielder won 19 trophies across a 9-year stint in the Premier League. And in a statement released this afternoon, Silva thanked the fans and his manager Pep Guardiola, adding that he'll be a Manchester City supporter for life. Now, former Liverpool and Arsenal goalkeeper Alex Maninger has died following a traffic accident aged 48. Several of his former clubs are amongst those who have paid tribute, while the Austrian FA have remembered him as an outstanding ambassador. He represented his country 33 times across a career that spanned over two decades. He also won the FA Cup and Premier League with the Gunners, as well as a Serie A title with Juventus. And Dermot Keenan's been in touch on YouTube saying, RIP to Alex Maninger. Was delighted in the 97-98 season that he was granted special dispensation to receive a league winner's medal after helping Arsenal win the league while Seaman was out injured. He hadn't played the required 10 matches to qualify for a winner's medal, but kept important clean sheets that contributed to Arsenal beating United for the league. So sad to lose his life at a young age. You can get us on YouTube, you can get us on WhatsApp as well. 087-9180-180 is our number. Now, in Gaelic games, an LGFA special congress has voted through the package of 12 playing rule enhancements that were trialled during the National League. So these changes are going to apply instantly for all adult inter-county championships at national and provincial levels. However, juvenile and under 20 championships will take up the rules next year, as their campaigns are already underway. Six of the rules mirror changes made in the men's game, including the kick-out mark, two-point scoring arc and freeze brought forward for tactical fouls or sideline descent. The six other changes look specifically at current LGFA rules, including those related to the tackle. In a statement, LGFA President Trina Murray said, "The feedback to date has been extremely positive, and we have already seen a tangible impact in terms of improving the speed and flow of the game. The adoption of these rules represents a significant progressive step forward for ladies Gaelic football at all levels." In golf then, we were talking about this with Alan Shipnuck last night. LIV's event in Mexico City has gone ahead, despite some questions remaining over its future. Rumours emerged this week that the Saudi Public Investment Fund were considering withdrawing its financial support of the tour. LIV Golf Chief Executive Scott O'Neill has told staff the 2026 season will continue uninterrupted and at full throttle, Meanwhile, Sergio Garcia said yesterday the players have not heard anything about reports of a potential collapse. The tour has reportedly lost accounted billions in losses since it was founded in 2022. However, the PIF has made its first major change in its portfolio because Saudi-based club Al Hilal, whose squad includes the likes of Darwin Nunez, Kalidou Koulibaly and Karim Benzema, has been sold to the Kingdom Holding Company, a firm run by Saudi Prince Al-Walid bin Talal. What are your thoughts on the live situation?
Well, I watched a fantastic game between Real Madrid and Bayern Munich last night, and you just think about the heritage of these clubs, whether you like them or not. They have massive heritage going back to the, you know, the 50s when the European Cup and Di Stefano and everything. And I talked to you just a moment ago about Munster and its heritage, and you want to see sporting heritage. And golf is a sport, like all sports, with heritage. The Masters, we've just seen the last week, it's about the history, it's about the stars of the game, it's about the best against the best. LIV has got no soul, it's got no meaning, it's got no audience. What is the audience for LIV? Could you name any of the teams that are in LIV? I couldn't.
You personally? No.
Do you know what I'm saying? It's the biggest waste of money. It's a sickening waste of money in this crazy world we're living in where so many people are suffering. And look, there are a lot of, I'm sure, good people working in LIV that, you know, you don't want to see their futures challenged. But I've never understood the meaning of it, apart from it being a Saudi Arabian geopolitical move to attract, you know, investment or sporting, I suppose, architecture of their country. The World Cup is going there. I mean, and that has been a success, but the turbulence in the Middle East, I just don't understand what LIV has ever been about, really, apart from geopolitical flexing the muscles, and the players have done well out of it financially, but it's been completely soulless, and as I say, an absolute waste of money for me.
Have you? Can you name any LIV team?
I think the Fireballs or the Cleekers or something like that.
Cleeks.
Because I remember Cameron Smith at the Masters walking past me, and he had the garb on, you know? The Aces or something, because Mickelson, I think, was in them, but haven't a clue, to be honest. And also, it's hurt the players, because apart from Tyrrell Hatton last week, John Rahm has suffered for going to LIV. Bryson's actually done all right, but a lot of players have not, their games have not improved from going to LIV. Yeah. John Rahm being the clearest example for me. I think if he'd stayed on the PGA Tour, I think he would have done a lot better.
Cameron Smith's team is a ripper.
There you go.
And there's also Smash. Taylor Gooch is their captain. You've got Four Aces, captained by Dustin Johnson. Crushers, which was Bryson's team. Fireballs is Sergio. High Flyers is Phil Mickelson, and Onikos. I'm not going to read you out all the LIV teams.
There's loads more. You can't buy an audience. You can buy players, but you can't buy an audience, and that's where LIV has failed.
John Duggan, thanks for popping in. We didn't even get around to Tottenham Hotspur. Next week, we'll check in.
Escaped, have I?
You have escaped, unscathed. Starter, thank you. We've got Brian O'Driscoll up next, and the news round is brought to you by Viagra Connect 50mg film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150ml tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation. Time for the cash machine.